So today I wanted to read a little bit, some samples from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then just comment. So it's not going to be as structured as the last few days where we were going by PowerPoints and then stick to some material, but we will. And there are many guests anyway who didn't attend the earlier session. So, Priya Sarupa Daita Sarupa Prema Sarupa Sahaja Virupa Nichanarupa Prabhure Karupa Tatanarupa Swavila Sarupe. So here we're talking about Rupa Goswami. There's a lot of rupas in the verse, as you could hear. Indeed, Srila Rupa Goswami, whose dear friend was Sarup Damodar, was the exact replica of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was very, very dear to the Lord, being the embodiment of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love. Rupa Goswami was naturally very beautiful. He very carefully followed the principles enunciated by the Lord, and he was a competent person to explain properly the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expended his mercy to Srila Rupa Goswami just so he could render service by writing transcendental literatures. Of all the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially Rupa Goswami is of course of great importance. Earlier on, he said speak about different topics, and maybe it was there, huh? And one of them was, yeah, I think it is here, the associates of Lord Chaitanya. If we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita in terms of who are the personalities that are being discussed there, then first of all, Lord Chaitanya. Second of all, the associates of Lord Chaitanya. The first and foremost of all is Srila Rupa Goswami. It's not that Rupa Goswami was the senior most amongst all the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, Rupa Goswami is a latecomer. It's more that Rupa Goswami was particularly the chosen person to represent Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in writing. He had that ability to write, he had the learning, he had, and he particularly, as it is said here, he had all the devotional qualifications. It said that he was an exact replica of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or that means an exact copy. I mean, of course, that cannot be taken in a literal way. It means that he was spiritually completely dedicated to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, and therefore began to become the perfect representative of these teachings. Then one becomes the replica, because the servant develops the qualities of the master. It's natural. Because whatever is important to the master becomes important to the servant. So with time, the servant begins to get the same priorities as the master. And in this way, Rupa Goswami had fully imbibed or absorbed that mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And thus, he counts as the replica. He was also able to particularly give that which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to reveal to the world, the nature of this, of the loving exchanges between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. And Rupa Goswami fully captured that moment. In relation to Sanatan Goswami was Rupa's elder brother, and Rupa was treating him like a spiritual master. And Sanatan Goswami is also there as a one of the founding personalities of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Sanatan Goswami was also intimately instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sanatan Goswami was given information by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Not only that, after Sanatan Goswami had been instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he said, "Now I have one more request. Now I have the request that you please place your lotus foot on my head and that you bless me that all this knowledge will be manifest in me." So that's an important point, because we hear so much knowledge, but we are not realizing it. You know what I'm saying? We can discuss at length about Krishna praying, and we can discuss about the symptoms of Baba, but where is our Baba? So in this way, Sanatan Goswami understood that, and he got those blessings. Then Sanatan Goswami, he became he got the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to write a book about the behavior, the prescribed behavior of a Vaishnava. So he focused more on these kind of on the external practices, like sadachar in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Sanatan Goswami particularly is giving us sambandha. He says he gives us the connection sambandha. And whereas as Rupa Goswami is giving us abhideya, he gives us the process by which we can attain perfection. Like we can see how the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar of Devotion, is a book. It's like a blueprint of the whole process of bhakti, like a map, a basic map of how you perform devotional service. Rupa Goswami then got that title, Rasacharya. Because he understood exactly the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's that famous story that in Jagannath Puri, this is the second meeting where Rupa came to Jagannath Puri, and Rupa there, in Jagannath Puri, he was writing, and he wrote a particular verse on a palm leaf, and then he went to the ocean to take bath. He temporarily put the palm leaf somewhere in the roof, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw it and took it out of the roof, read that verse. And the verse was saying, like, where is that? Where is that beloved? Where is that Krishna who is playing the fifth note on his flute on the banks of the Yamuna, standing under the Vantasi tree? And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu read that verse, he became very, very impressed by it. Because it was exactly capturing his mood that Krishna outside of Vrindavan is not the same Krishna. When Krishna lives in Dwarka and Krishna is in royal dress, when Krishna is a king, Krishna is always surrounded by servants, assistants, ministers, associates, never alone. Right? Then he's not the same Krishna, in the same mood as he is in Vrindavan. And it was in that mood in Vrindavan where Krishna is just more personal and not surrounded by this whole official entourage. So he's more accessible. So Rupa Goswami wrote that verse to explain the mood of Srimati Radharani, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that, he was deeply impressed. So it turned out that the verse was part of a play that Rupa Goswami was writing. This play that he was writing is known as the Vidagdha Madhava. So the Vidagdha Madhava is part of two plays. There is Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava. One play, Lalita Madhava, is describing the pastimes of Krishna outside of Vrindavan, and the Vidagdha Madhava, the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And the Vidagdha Madhava is focusing on great separation. There is a description how Radharani is in the forest along with Vishakha. In Vishakha, Radharani is in a confused state due to Purvarag. Purvarag means due to previous attachment to Krishna. And she is remembering the form of the person Krishna. And she's thinking of Krishna, of this form. And then, so she's going through great experiences of separation, and Vishakha is trying to pacify her. And finally, Vishakha makes a drawing of Krishna. And Vishakha is very expert, so she makes a very nice drawing of Krishna. So as soon as Radharani sees that drawing of Krishna, she also becomes completely attached to the drawing, but at the same time to also the form of Krishna. So now she's attached to two, and she's feeling separation from both. So what was meant as the cure actually makes it worse. Now she's even more overwhelmed by separation. Then, just then, Krishna is also in the forest. Krishna is with Sridham and Madhumanga. And Krishna is also really excited because he knows very well that Srimati Radharani is somewhere in that forest, and he is excited, hoping to meet her. So Krishna is also overwhelmed and not completely clear, but he's trying to hide it and act normal. So he says to Sridhar, because there's only one thing he can think of, and that is Radharani. So finally he says to Sridhar, Sridhar, don't you also think that Srimati Radharani is the most beautiful girl in the entire three worlds? And Sridhar is not responding. Sridhar doesn't say a word because, and then Madhumangal says, it's his sister. Right? So Krishna is so confused that he doesn't realize that Sridhar is the brother of Srimati Radharani. So in this way, it shows that Krishna is also confused. Anyway, Krishna then, you know, in that mood of separation, he sees the name Krishna written in kumkum, in red powder, on a leaf in the forest. And he realizes that it's Radharani who wrote it. So he takes his flute and he plays that his flute with such feeling. And when she hears that flute while she's somewhere else in the forest, she says to Vishakha, what is this sound? What is this sound? This sound is just capturing my mind. And she becomes completely attached to that sound. And then she has become, and she says, I am most unfortunate. I have simultaneously become attached to three personalities. She has become attached to three personalities, namely the person with the form, yeah, the one on the picture drawn by Vishakha, and the one playing the flute. So Radharani says, because of this attachment simultaneously to three persons, I am to be condemned. And the only thing left for me is to die because of this. And then Vishakha says, they're not three persons, they're one and the same. And Radharani says, the same? The same person? You mean they're the same? Yes, they're the same. They're one person. Oh. Anyway, so in this way, Rupa Goswami describes a little bit about the mood of Srimati Radharani, and he has really captured what this mood of separation, you know, this mood of separation of Krishna is all about. How much the devotee cannot live without Krishna for a moment. How the devotee, somehow or other, by some association with Krishna, either directly or indirectly, becomes attached to Krishna. In the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there is the description about the yajnik brahmanas and their wives. And somehow or other, the wives of the brahmanas had become very much attached to Krishna. Krishna and Balaram, they were hungry. They sent the cowherd boys in the name of Balaram, since he was a kshatriya, to beg some foodstuffs. The brahmana didn't give. But the wives, later, they easily gave. Why? Because these wives, they were devotees of Krishna. How come? Because they had associated, they had been buying milk. They had been buying milk from the cowherd girls from Vrindavan. And therefore, because they bought milk from the gopis, they had become attached to Krishna. So in this way, the attachment to Krishna in a devotee develops either directly or indirectly. Directly by meeting Krishna face to face, or indirectly through his devotee. And when one develops such attachment, it is at that stage that separation begins to manifest. When the devotee gets his attachment, becomes deep and strong. Then one is feeling, one is feeling the desire to be with Krishna again and again. And this mood of separation becomes stronger and stronger. It's for that reason that separation is highlighted so much in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because at that time, at the time when one is separated from Krishna, one's desire to be with Krishna is the strongest. It's even stronger than when one is with Krishna. And therefore it is said at that point, one's love for Krishna is at its most intense stage. But the separation is not like the separation that we know in the world, where the prince and the princess are separated, and the prince is now, you know, fasting till death, and he's like, and he's totally depressed. Right? The thing is that in separation from Krishna, naturally one turns to remembering Krishna. And as soon as such remembrance of Krishna is there, then immediately the devotee is becoming ecstatic. So, because that's the nature of Krishna. As soon as we remember anything about Krishna, we become ecstatic. And there's a taste. Machitamat kataparanaburiyantasparasparan katiyantaschamamnicha tushanticharamanticha. My devotees derive great bliss and satisfaction conversing about me with one another, and they are tushyanti cha aramanti cha, always enjoying greatly satisfied. So Srila Rupa Goswami understood this very, very well because he had fully realized all this. He was a replica of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he himself was also experiencing this separation from Krishna. Otherwise, how could he have explained it? Of course, Srila Rupa Goswami was extremely learned. Rupa Goswami was a great learned scholar, and as such, he was able to explain it very, very nicely. Now, it is interesting when we look at that Rupa Goswami is known as the Rasa Acharya, the one who teaches us the Rasa theology. Now, it's not that Rupa Goswami is the first one who speaks about this. Right? In we'll take the board now. Classical Vedic times, there was the sage Bharata Muni, and Bharata Muni, he wrote the Natya Shastra. And the Natya Shastra is basically a scripture which is dealing with the with various arts, the arts of drama, the art of dance, Bharatanatyam, my favorite, the music. The dance is great, but the music, oh my God. I guess I don't have a Vedic taste. And then there is the in the art of drama, Bharata Muni was expressing rasa. Yeah? So he's expressing rasa, different moods. But Bharata Muni recognized eight different rasas. He had some of the primary rasas. And he had some of the, he had wonder, chivalry, he had hasya, laughing, he had vipatsa, the one where you're shocked, right? So like this, and he got into these rasas in great detail, the expression, etc. But it was more like a part of a dramatical expression, so to speak. It wasn't like but we find, for example, in the writings of Bharata Muni, we find descriptions, terminology, something like vyabhichari bhav, right? So vyabhichari bhav is terminology that's right there in Rupa Goswami's writings. Yeah? You look in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, and there it is, you know, vyabhichari bhav. And you go, wow, you know what I mean? Did Bharata Muni already have that? Yeah? A stage of agitation. Vyabhichari bhav is a stage where one becomes agitated. And in this way, the many elements of rasa theology are found in the writings of Bharata Muni. So that's interesting. Okay? We find other we find in the 9th century. In Kashmir, a Abhinna, I mean like that, Gupta, who is a scholar and who also writes about this rasa theology. So, you know, this is Vedic times. And here we are in the 9th century. Okay, and then, but at the same time he was also a Shaivite, and it is like a sort of, but he did write about, more about rasa, and he, and edit Santaras, of all things. He had a 9th thing, a neutral state, which wasn't found in the writings of Bharata. Then it develops further, and you get in the 14th, you get in the 14th century, you get a work which is quite developed. It's called the Sahitya Darpan. This is the 14th century, and the Sahitya Darpan is a very developed book. One can find on the internet English translations of the Sahitya Darpan. I have one, and it is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita from time to time when drama is being discussed, and there is reference to the Sahitya Darpan. There is a book of Rupa Goswami called the Natak Chandrika, which was written later, Natak Chandrika. Well, RG is Rupa Goswami. In the Natak Chandrika, I have not seen an English edition, I've only got a Hindi edition, offered in a Sanskrit edition. So whoever can read Hindi or Sanskrit can do something with it. But in the Natak Chandrika, there is a reference where it is said that Rupa Goswami does not accept the Sahitya Darpan. And the reason why he's not accepting the Sahitya Darpan is because the Sahitya Darpan is recognizing Swakya Ras as the topmost, the merit, the stage of being married as the highest rasa, and not the parakya rasa that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put as a whole, as the highest, the forbidden relationship of paramours. Right? Parakya rasa, what Krishna has with the gopis, they are already, many of them are married, and yet they are having secret meetings with Krishna. So the meetings with Krishna are like stolen time, right? Stolen moments. So these stolen moments are very precious. Whereas obviously in a marriage situation, the routine kicks in, you know, after a while. And once you have that ring on your finger, then you have duties, right? Too many. Yeah. It makes the relationship different. And in Parakya, it's, you can never think that the partner is yours. Never think. You know, you can't take him for granted in Parakya. Of course, you know, it is also said that actually the husbands of these gopis are shadow expansions of Krishna. They are not real personalities. They are not never really touching their wives. They are just, for the sake of lila, they are there. Krishna has expanded these forms, but they are not not real personalities. They're just there for the sake of rasa. Jiva Goswami explains it in Gopal Champu in quite a detailed way. Okay, this now. So one sec, just let me round it off, and then I'm done for questions. So this Sahitya Darpan then is a, although Rupa Goswami officially rejected it, a lot is there. A lot of the things that Rupa Goswami presents about Ras is also found there in the Sahitya Darpan from before. So, looking at it like that, it looks like there is a, then you get BRS, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, and the Vidakta Madhava, and all that, okay? Alright, so it looks like it gradually evolved. Yeah? From what you just heard from me, you get the idea that the rasa theology has gradually developed over time until it came to the most sophisticated, complete form in which Rupa Goswami presented it in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's how it comes across. But there is something else going on, right? It's that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has fully instructed Rupa Goswami. He has met Rupa Goswami in Prayag. He has met him there at the Dasaswamedha Ghat, and he has instructed him. So he has explained everything to Rupa Goswami. And about these matters. So Rupa Goswami receives this knowledge in a descending way. And Rupa Goswami himself has fully realized this knowledge, so has fully realized the rasas. And then, as Srinivas Acharya explains, Nana Shastra Vichara Naikinikuno Satana Samstapaku, that the six Goswamis were very scrutinizingly studying all the Vedic literatures to establish the principles, the true religious principles, Saddharma Samstapaku. So that's what they did. So basically, we see that it comes from both sides. It comes down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and is fully realized, but at the same time, there is the full rooting in the history of the past, because Rupa Goswami was very learned and therefore very expert in Sanskrit, in the rules of Sanskrit drama and so on. And so he also was aware of the history, but at the same time, whereas what we find in the writings of others is not, although it is expressing rasa, it's only expressing a reflection of that rasa. And just like in this world, you know, we have asas. Love, we have ghastly rasas, Dracula, and all these varieties of things. So we have it all, but the reflection of the original spiritual rasa is shallow in the material world. It's not very deep. In the spiritual world, the rasa is experienced to a much greater extent. So therefore, all these earlier accounts of rasa are never complete and never to be compared with what Rupa Goswami is doing. Rupa Goswami is revealing the spiritual world and nothing less than the nature of spiritual relationships. But, okay, these are all... But that knowledge is all reflected here also in these earlier accounts. It's important because many will actually see it as an evolution, right? And they'll miss the real understanding that I just gave now, you know, how it's descending from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then going down into the history of Vedic literature. Now, questions?
Am I understood correctly that Rupa Goswami used all these books.
What?
The Rupa Goswami, he used these books from
The first part of the sentence I missed. You said something. Say, start the whole sentence, because you repeated half the sentence.
I understood correctly.
That he used all these books.
Yeah.
Yes, Rupa Goswami was familiar with these writings. Yeah? He had studied these books, all of them. Like Rupa Goswami is discussing with Sarup Damodar Goswami in Anjali 1. He's discussing the the Vidakta Madhava. And then Sarup Damodar is asking, what kind of opening have you used to introduce the players onto the stage? And then there is a particular prescribed type of options, and then Guru Goswami says, I've used this in this opening. Yeah? And you know, the one that marks an auspicious time and an auspicious place, the full moon night in Vrindavan. Like this, Sanskrit drama is not just a creation of the author as he likes, but Sanskrit drama is bound by a certain number of acts, a certain way that the acts have to follow each other. There's a narrator who introduces the play, and then you go into. So all these things are. There are varieties, and one can. But Rupa Goswami composed his dramas within the context of the rules of Sanskrit drama. Therefore, like Rupa Goswami Natak Chandrika, which is then directly on the topic, in Natak Chandrika, he is endorsing Bharata Muni's. Yeah? It's like. And he's rejecting Sahitya Dharma. He's saying he doesn't accept the Sahitya Dharma. But he uses many things which we only find in the Sahitya Dharma. And that's all we can say. You know, you don't find it anywhere else but in the Sahitya Dharma. And he says he endorses Bharata Muni. He doesn't refer to Vinayaputta. But he obviously was aware of that work also. And, you know, like everybody else is aware of it.
I would like to ask, maybe you'll connect to this rasa, but what kind of rasa is sankirtan rasa? When devotees are doing sankirtan, they're also like, when they stop doing, they have some separation from the service, you know? What kind of, there's also some rasa with Krishna, and some connection there. How to understand in the different
Okay. It's a good question. Which one of the rasas would it be placed under? It's first of all dasyam. It's servitorship. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Yuga avatar. And he particularly comes to take on this mission. So anybody who takes up that mission is becoming the servant of the Yuga avatar. The mercy of the Yuga avatar is very, very strongly present. So if now you take up service in the mission of the Yuga avatar, then immediately you get like a lot of result of that. So it's if there's any... It's the rasa, it's the, that is the result of the surrender, of being the instrument. Yeah. The Sankirtan devotees become blissful. You know, in the morning it's hard to get out of the car. Every Sankirtan devotee, to get out a little. But once you're out there, then it starts going. And at night you're totally blissful. That's the, because of the surrender, the service attitude. Dasyam. Yeah, so Rupa Goswami recognizes 12 rasas, 5 primary rasas, 7 indirect rasas. The 5 primary are, of course, conjugal, parental, friendship, servitorship, and neutral, and then the indirect rasas are like chivalry, wonder, then laughing or joking. There is shock out, horror I already mentioned. Can't think of more off the top of my head. Anyway, I did pretty good, I think, considering everything. Now that I'm spaced out. I hit my head in the most stupid possible way you can imagine. I didn't have my glasses on. I was picking up something. I dropped something in the bathroom and then I hit my head on the heater. It's really hard, quite hard. Yesterday and today I'm sort of like, it's okay, but I'm not structured. Although I did not bad there. But I could have done it more precise and like if I would have prepared it, but I couldn't prepare. Impossible. So I'm doing it all from memory today. Which is good enough, I think. So Rupa Goswami as the Ras Acharya. Then I want to flash back and kind of look at the... Okay, yeah, sure.
When you were talking about this, the husbands of the gopis are shadows of Krishna, I was wondering sometimes we hear that some devotees are advised like, okay, just become wife of Krishna, or some devotees say they want to be only wife of Krishna. Is it possible for Jiva?
It's Prabhupada did say, you know, you can marry Krishna to the ladies. He told Yadurani, you can marry Krishna. But one has to understand that for us to desire such things is out of place. And if we start advising people along those lines, then we advise them, we give an advice which is suitable for liberated souls. And if we give such an advice to a conditioned soul, then that's not the proper advice. Liberated souls are those who are aware of the nature of their relationship with Krishna. After all, you know, if we follow Prabhupada's understanding, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhu Kabunai Sravanadi Sudha Chitta Karya Udai, the living being is reawakening his original identity, and the rasa is already fixed and is becoming uncovered, right, according to Prabhupada. So therefore, we have to wait till our rasa becomes uncovered, and then we'll see. And it's not that necessarily our present bodily existence and mental makeup reflects that rasa. You know, the truck driver may be a gopi, and the ballerina may be a cowherd boy. You can't really be sure. Like the temporary material identity has really covered the spiritual identity, so it's not completely so clear like that. Yeah. So we have to wait. You know, if someone says, "Oh, you know, you should get married to Krishna," that's out.
When devotees say this, then we know that it's premature.
Premature. They should not say such thing. This is meant for liberated souls. Yeah, that's a bit over the top. Yeah, it's over the top, really over the top. And you know, like it's in the Rupa Goswami, mentions that we should not accept many vows. Right? So that means that we should not accept vows beyond the vows that are prescribed. Basically, when he says we should not accept many vows, it means there are the basic prescribed vows. He also says that one must take initiation. That's a vow that one takes. This is under the in the 64 items of bhakti, 64 limbs of bhakti. So that okay is a prescribed vow, but not that we start to add all kinds of vows and you know and. I will marry in a Sringadev, and you know, yeah, and yeah, you know, and then we have boys and girls doing these things, and anyway, it gets too much.
I read that Prabhupada said that Shantaras is not for devotees, the other kind of spiritual world,
Kamuna, and. Yeah. Well, generally, you know, like now that we're on this topic of rasa, and the rasas being fixed, and it is said that generally, the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are developing the three higher rasas, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, or friendship, parental, and conjugal. So that's a little confusing, right? But we see Uddhava praying to be a blade of grass. So that's Santaras. But Santaras is generally not so desired, because Santaras is not active in service to Krishna. It's kind of remote. Right? But it is there. It is there. The cows are said to be in Santaras, for example. I'm not finished. It's puzzling. Your point is still there. You know, it hasn't been removed from the table. I did not at all remove your. The point you raised, I just left it there. I was just creating more context. Now, when it comes to... So we see there are devotees in Santaras. Devotees of Krishna. Although all Santaras is mixed with a little bit of Madhurya, because we see that they do get active. Yeah, we see that the Yamuna is working together with the water plants, and when Krishna puts his lotus feet in the Yamuna, then the water plants grab Krishna's feet and hold them there. And then the Yamuna begins to show, stops flowing, and gets ecstatic whirlpools. Or the trees in Vrindavan, whenever Krishna is there, begin to produce all these flowers. So there's a tinge of dasya, a tinge of active service, right? And they are also facilitating the Madhurya, because Madhurya is sort of everywhere in Vrindavan, and all the other rasas are supporting that Madhurya ras. They're all adding to that. The whole forest of Vrindavan may be in Santaras, but they are at the same time producing nice fragrant flowers which incite Madhurya ras, right? The fragrance of that forest. So there's a Madhurya tinge in Vrindavan. In the Adi Lila, in the descriptions of the branches of the Chaitanya tree, Adi Lila chapter 9 to 12, there is an interesting reference when it comes to the branches of Advaita Acharya. You get a chapter, branches of Chaitanya, branches of Nityananda, branches of Advaita. And when you come to the branches of Advaita Acharya, in a purport it is written, generally the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are or that generally the followers of Advaita Acharya and Nityananda are in Sakya Ras or Vatsalya Ras. But when they are in prolonged association of Lord Chaitanya, they can also attain Madhurya Ras. So this is like, you know, when you read that, and you think, like, what's this, you know? I mean, it looks now that we can change rasas. And then there's a conversation of Hansadutta, Prabhupada and Hansadutta is asking Prabhupada the question, and usually Prabhupada's disciples, you know, when Prabhupada gives an answer, they, and it's not completely clear, they stop asking out of fear. But Hansadutta is very persistent in this conversation, and he keeps on asking. And he asks, Prabhupada, can you change your ras? And Prabhupada says, why would you change your ras? Right? There's no point. Why would you change the ras? It's like, you know, doesn't make sense. Right? Everyone wants that the ras. And Hansadutta, but Hansadutta is not leaving it at. He comes back again. He says, but can you change the ras? And again, Prabhupada says, why would you change the ras? Three times Prabhupada says, why would you change the ras? And then the fourth time, Hansadutta still comes back and asks again, you know? And Prabhupada says, well, yes, you can, you know? And then I guess, but why would you? So that's interesting. And it seems that by the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that would be one explanation to that quote in the Adi Lila could be that the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu awakens the desire in the heart of someone. So by the prolonged association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one could get a desire for Madhurya Ras, and one could even if one started out in another ras, originally one could wind up with Madhurya Ras. So when we hear statements that generally Santa Ras is not part of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it seems to indicate that. Some people have offered other theories. You know, they've offered the theory that only the people that have constitutionally Santa, the higher rasas in their nature are attracted to ISKCON, and the Santa Ras people get attracted to another movement. Yeah, but I don't find that very satisfying, that answer. That doesn't sound very convincing to me. I don't buy that. You see, there is something called mental speculation and something called philosophical speculation. Prabhupada makes a distinction between the two. Mental speculation is that kind of speculation where you just make up your own philosophy out of nowhere. Or you make a kittery and you take some ingredients from everywhere and, you know, and make primordial soup, and then you get your own creation. But there is also philosophical speculation. And philosophical speculation is that when we don't have the full information about a particular philosophical point, that we're trying to understand how it could be true, how it logically could be true. Even, it is sort of said, it is like this, and then we're trying to figure out. That's allowed, philosophical speculation. Mental speculation is forbidden. Manodharma in Sanskrit. Forbidden dharma, manodharma. That's forbidden occupation, forbidden dharma, speculation. Actually, what is called speculation in English, in the Sanskrit word for it is manodharma. Manodharma, forbidden dharma. But the philosophical speculation is permitted. So that's what I just did. I can quickly look and see if I can find that thing. Yeah, well, anyway, this question about Krishnadas Kaviraj does write on several occasions that the Vaishnavas are not aspiring and not aspiring for the Santa Ras, that they're generally focusing on the four higher rasas. So that's all I have to say about it. Whatever else, what I haven't said is also what there are things I haven't said because we don't really have official information on that. I can speculate further and further and further, but what's the point? You know, like it doesn't get to anything conclusive because ultimately we don't have the information. And they didn't ask Prabhupada really always the pertinent questions. You know, this is a big problem, is that the disciples of Prabhupada were still quite young, okay, when Prabhupada left. Yeah? So many of the questions that we might have today, you know what I mean? It's like now you have senior preachers, and they may think of issues that not necessarily came up in Prabhupada's presence because they didn't have such a broad knowledge of the philosophy of the scriptures. And then whatever that filters through the lectures, you know, and then so now, therefore, in the collective body of devotees, questions are living that were not yet prevalent at the time of Prabhupada being present with his disciples. So that's the problem. And they just didn't ask the questions. And so many times they think, like, why didn't he ask the questions? You know? But that's the situation. So there are some questions that remain vague. And this is one of them. The general understanding is, which you will hear from most, is, yeah, Jivas never change their position. So, you know, what if someone is a blade of grass, then he's a blade of grass. Yeah, that would be logical. But maybe based on that point of Advila, chapter 8, the chapter where Bhadadvaita Acharya, and on the conversation with Hansa Dutt, based on these two points, we may put a question mark. Not saying this is a fact, but we put it as a question from, well, maybe it's after all possible that one changes rasa if by prolonged association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one develops a desire to get that other rasa. That might be possible. One could argue against that and say, yes, but there's the story of Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta was a Ram Bhakta. And Murari Gupta was asked by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Murari, why don't you worship Krishna? We're all worshiping Krishna. Murari, please worship Krishna. So Murari, then that night he just couldn't sleep. That night he was just, the whole night he was crying. And in the morning Murari came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and threw himself at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, I cannot give up my Lord Raghunath, but I can also not give up your order. And therefore, I better give up my life. So then, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked him up and he wrote with his finger on Murari's forehead, Ramdas. And he wrote Ramdas on his forehead with his finger and said, you know, you are Hanuman. You are Hanuman. You are Ramdas. Right? So he couldn't, Murari couldn't change. He couldn't change. But in South India there was a Brahmana. He changed. He was first worshipping Ram, and then by the association of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, began to worship Krishna. Now some say, yes, but actually, internally he was a bhakta of Krishna, and only temporarily he was a bhakta of Ram. And possibly, maybe, but that's interpretation, because that's not written there. So, whatever. But there is that Brahman in South India who was first chanting Ram, devotee of Ram, and became a devotee of Krishna, who changed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence. Of course, I wanted to carry on with another topic, but since we're also taking breaks, I think this is a good time to take a break of a good 10, 15 minutes, and then we'll carry on with part two. Okay, last question before the break.
So what does exactly mean audarya?
Audarya is the mood of the magnanimous mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Namo Mahavalinyaya, it's that mood of flooding the entire world. So Audarya is the mood of abundance. It means abundance. And abundance is just, it's overflowing. Yeah? And that's exactly what it's like in Mayapur. The mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just overflowing. The Ganga is overflowing. Everything pops out of the ground. And you know, it's like sometimes the devotees in Mayapur say, in this temple, we don't know how it's going on. Lord Chaitanya is the temple president. He said, like, otherwise, how can we manage such a big project? You know, we don't know. Right? He said, here, Lord Chaitanya is the president. Of course, they have managers. But they say that sometimes. And yes, it's going on by special mercy, Sri Ramayapur. And it's just, and we've seen over the years, the first time I came, there wasn't very much at all, right? I came when the long building was there and when the lotus building was there, and that was it. Right? And it's like, it was all just field, the rest. Yeah. Little garden, but field. And now, it's just something else compared to those days. Yeah. So much has been built. So I've myself seen how buildings have popped out of the ground like mushrooms. Yeah. I've been part of building some also. But so many buildings are there now. In Sri Ramayapur, it's all powered by that Udarya Shakti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And things just grow, flowers just grow in Mayapur, like huge things, monster flowers, right? Enormous things, right? Just pop out of the ground, practically speaking, and just ready to be offered to the Lord. And As the temple was growing, first we had Radha Madhava in the old building, in the lotus building, on the ground floor of the lotus building. That was the temple. Now it's some sort of exhibition area there. That was the temple. And Radha Madhava was down on the ground. And you could just walk up to Radha Madhava, as close as you and me, right? And sort of lean on the railing and have a real good look at Madhava. Right? Gosh, now up there on that stage, it's not the same as it used to be. But then the deity worship, more ritual, and started to more darshan, more mantras, more everything. And at one point, first we tried to follow it all, and then we realized it's impossible. You know, the worship in Mayapur is just expanding and expanding and expanding, and you know, you can't be part of everything. It's just getting too much. Right? It's still going on, still expanding. More and more and more. That's Sridham Mayapur. That Odarya Munch is just... So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is manifesting all these aspects of mercy. Flooding, overflowing Odarya. Then part two. I wanted to have a look at Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it begins with the first meeting between Dabirkas Sakar Malik and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli. It is part of the summary chapter, number one of the Madhya Lila, chapter one, Madhya Lila. And there, that meeting is described in sort of detail. There's a purport where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta has gotten into that meeting, and he puts a date on it of 1513. 1510, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and went to Jagannath Puri. And then in 1513, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was interested in going to sannyas, going to Vrindavan. And on the way to Vrindavan, he passed through Bengal. But he never made it to Vrindavan. He went only as far as Kanai Natashala. So Kanai Natashala is next to the to Ramakeli. Basically, if you, in a gross way, Mayapur is about 110 kilometers north of Calcutta. So we have, let's say, Calcutta, CCU. We have here Navadvip. Up here we have the district, the Malda district, and there we have a place called Goda. I write a little small now. And then next to Goda we have Ramakeli, and sort of a little bit close to that we have Kanai Natha Shala. If you can read it, you're lucky. If you, then you definitely have good eyes, but it has to be a little, what can I do, you know, I can't make the map as big as the roof. Then we are sort of here on the border with Bangladesh, and that border with Bangladesh kind of, it runs somewhere, let's say, roughly speaking, here. So Ramakeli, well, it's actually even closer, because Ramakeli is on the bank of the river, and here there's a river, the Patna River, which is the border. And then it's about here. Here is the Jessore district, and there is a place in a subdivision called Fasi, Fasi Abad, is a place called Prenbagh. And this place, Prenbagh, is the village where Rupa and Sanatan appeared in this world. So here is India, and this is Bangladesh. Yeah, not bad for an amateur. And then here, South Ocean. There you go. Yeah, so Rupa and Sanatan, they came somewhere from this area, and then later, when they were students here, the family originally came from Karnataka, which is South India. Bangalore is in Karnataka, and they were Karnataka Brahmins, but they were a wealthy Brahmin family, and there was quite some land holdings in the family, and there was a family dispute over property, and the ancestors of Rupa and Sanatan had to sort of leave the south. And initially they went to Kannauj, which is near Kanpur in Uttar Pradesh, where they settled in a village, and then from there on they moved towards Bengal, and after moving two times they came to this place. And all this is recorded in the Lagu, what's it? Lagu Toshani from Jiva Goswami, who is obviously a nephew, so he's part of the family, so he describes his own family lineage, so that's like pretty solid. Yeah. Okay. So here in this village Prenbagh, the situation that was existing was there was quite a community of Karnataka Brahmanas staying there. Not exclusively, but with Rupa and Sanatan, since they were a wealthy family, when the family left, others came with them and also settled there. They had their following, and that following followed them all the way to Bengal and stayed with them. And even later, when Rupa and Sanatan finished their education, exactly where they did their education, I can't say for sure. But they were at one point enrolled in the government service of the Nawab Hussein Shah. The Nawab Hussein Shah, he basically said that he would kill the entire Brahmin community and all the cows in Bengal if they would not accept the post as ministers. So that was the convincing argument. So the Nawab knew how to get to the sore, get to the heart, so to speak. So they took up government service. As they took up that government service, they did in Goda today. There's still a ruin of the palace of the Nawab Hussein Shah. It sort of looks a bit like long corridors with Gothic arches and colonnades, and are still standing there. A very European type of building, actually. And there in Goda, there is also supposed to be a jail where Sanatan Goswami later was incarcerated by the Nawab. Anyway, that's jumping ahead in the story. Basically, when Rupa and Sanatan were enrolled in the government service, they made on the bank of the Ganges, which is the Padma actually, a branch of the Ganges, they made a village. Ramakeli was their village, and it was a place where they made a Gupta Vrindavan, a hidden Vrindavan. And they started to have places that were already relating to Vrindavan. Yeah. And, well, now it's not clear, of course, you know, because it's history, and when there's history, it's nothing is clear, right? Because people make up so many stories. But if you go to Ramakeli today, you will find deities of Madan Mohan. And they say that these deities were installed by and worshipped by Rupa and Sanatana Goswami in when they were staying there, yeah, and that they're their original deities. Okay, you know, one may question it. Say we accept it. Then you will find in Ramakeli, you will find a Pont, a Radha Kund, a Shama Kund, a Lalita Kund, a Vishaka Kund, yeah, which are ponds that have been excavated there. And, you know, it's, again, you know, it's, of course, accepting what people say, that this is, that these were also constructed by Rupa and Sanatana. So that's quite interesting, because then we see that you have to imagine what Rupa and Sanatana were like at that time. Obiol Kapoor has a story in his book, a story which I don't necessarily take as historical, but part of the story is historical. So I'll tell you the story and I'll tell you which part is historical. The story is that it was a rainy, stormy night. Not even an owl would venture out in such kind of weather. It's just like pouring and horrible weather. And just then, right, a barber and his wife were sort of on the veranda of their house looking at the rain, and they saw a palanquin being carried, you know, being carried by servants, like a royal palanquin. And, you know, the barber is saying, who in the world is going out in this kind of weather? And then the barber's wife said, who else but a dog? But a dog of the emperor, right? A dog of the Nawab. Yeah. You know. So then it is, according to the story, it was Rupa Goswami who was seated in a palanquin and was being carried from Ramakeli to Goda. And this would have hit Rupa Goswami, you know, one of the impetuses for him to become a devotee. Alright, you know, the barber and his wife, I don't know whether that's historical or not. I wouldn't really go for that. That I would put in the category of village gossip. Right? But that Rupa Goswami was being carried in a palanquin. Oh yes, he was. And that Rupa Goswami was seated there in nice cushion. And that Rupa Goswami was dressed in aristocratic Islam-style dress. Oh yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. Certainly so. At least when going to office, and that Rupa Goswami was summoned by the emperor, oh yes, so many times. So this certainly was a normal procedure, to go up with an aristocratic people or being carried in palanquins. It was very common. That was the means of aristocratic transport. Says that Mother Sachi was also carried around in a palanquin. I have on three computers some pictures of palanquins from that era in Bengal, which I put in a slideshow, but I just say no homework today. And, you know, it's okay. As I said, the lazy modern mind wants a picture. We cannot even visualize a palanquin anymore. But they were like sort of little domes, you know? Little domes, kind of Indian looking, a little dome, and then, one had to sit cross-legged or sort of leaning back in the cushions. So in this way, Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were living like aristocratic Muslims at that time, externally. They were wearing the dress. At home, maybe not so much so, because they had another life. And their other life was in Ramakeli. And in Ramakeli, they had created so many places that were relating to Vrindavan. Right? It's described in the Bhakti Ratnakar. It says that they had made many places of Vrindavan, which is an indication that it was there in their time. And if we go now and look, where are those places? We find Radha Kund, Shyama Kund, Lati Kund, and Shaka Kund. And we just find that Rupa and Sanatana were living there, and they had constructed many cottages on the banks of the Ganga. And they were inviting scholars from all over India to come and stay there. So all kinds of Brahmanas would come and they would stay there. And daily there were discussions. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that at one point Sanatana Goswami, well, at one point Rupa Goswami retired. And Nala let him retire. It is said that then they loaded up wealth in a lot of boats. This was not just the wealth of Rupa, this was the wealth of both Rupa and Sanatana. And they all loaded it up in boats. And these boats, loaded up with gold, went down the river, it said. And they sent it to their native place. Well, you can see, from Ramakeli, they came down the river, and then a portion had to go overland. Yeah? But, you know, it made sense to go by the river. So we can see, they went by the river, they came there, and then Rupa Goswami stayed home and he started to distribute the wealth. It says he distributed a portion to the Brahmanas, a portion kept for emergency. Well, the fact of the matter is that Rupa gave these Brahmanas, they were obviously people that he knew, right? That he had relationships with. And it wasn't just a 5-minute job, you know, or a 1-day job. There was a lot of assets there, a lot of wealth. And Rupa Goswami took time. He took time to distribute this wealth. So he was obviously back in the village for some time. Yeah. So then Sanatana Goswami, meanwhile, it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he didn't want to go to work anymore. He didn't want to work for the Nawab anymore, and he just refused to go to the court. And it is said that then the Nawab came himself. He said, I've sent my court physician. He came to check you out. Your health is perfectly okay. And, you know, we are... So what is this? You make this excuse, you're sick. Meanwhile, it's described that Sanatana Goswami was seated with 25 Brahmanas reading the Bhagavatam. Now, Bhakti Ratnakar tells us that that's not at all out of out of character, because this is what they were doing all the time. All along in their free time, they were basically discussing Shastra. And all these Brahmanas were there, and they discussed Shastra, and especially Bhagavatam. Why? Because in the Krishna Stavavali, there is an interesting reference. And this reference is that Sanatana Goswami, when he was young, when he was a young man, he had a dream. And in this dream, a Brahmana came to his house, and this Brahmana gave him a gift. And the gift was a copy of the Bhagavatam. The manuscript that was handwritten in those days. You know what I mean? So to have your personal copy of the Bhagavatam, I mean, that was something. You know, that wasn't just like,
okay, you gave him the Bhagavatam, that was really nice of him. Right?
No, it was like, you know, something extraordinary. Right? So, and then Sanatana Goswami woke up and said, oh, it was only a dream. Oh. But later that day, that same Brahmana came and did present him the Bhagavatam. So then, because he had the dream before and then the Brahmana came, then he took it much more serious, and then he really took it like this is some sort of arrangement from above. And therefore, from that day on, he focused on the Bhagavatam and read the Bhagavatam every day. Okay? So it's not out of character that Sanatana Goswami is studying Bhagavatam while, as is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That just fits the picture very well. Because actually, he had been studying for a long time. And many of the prominent scholars of that time came to Ramakeli to instruct Rupa and Sanatana. And therefore, these brothers, they were learned in all kinds of branches of knowledge. They're extremely learned. Yeah. So, and they had the best teachers. The best teachers, the most prominent acharyas of India came to visit and stay there. And basically, they themselves were big scholars. And then they had big discussions every day. This is all Bhakti Ratnakara. And, you know, where philosophical points were hammered out with all these scholars. So you can understand that, like, they had tremendous learning. And therefore it's not surprising that these two brothers became like the theologians of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, along with Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami also... Sri Vallabh was the younger brother, and Jiva Goswami apparently also spent some time there in Ramakeli. Some are arguing that Jiva Goswami was even there as a small child in 1513 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. Others are putting another date, whatever it may be. And Jiva was not there yet. That we will never know. But, yeah, this is interesting. So anyway, there in Ramakeli, Rupa and Sanatana, when they were staying there, they did make a Gupta Vrindavan. And if they made already Radhakum and Shyamakum, then who were they? Externally dressed up like Muslims? Externally acting out government duties, internally devotees, and then so absorbed, already having a Manan Mohan, already having a Radhakund and Shyamakund. Alright, we cannot scientifically prove that, you know, but as indications that they had. And that would indicate an internal depth, you know, in them. Which was completely transcendental. Basically, it means that before meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were already great realized Vaishnavas, not just learned Vaishnavas, but realized Vaishnavas who were realizing aspects of the spiritual world, whose focus, who had a deep, at least a deep focus on Vrindavan and on. I mean, chronologically, Radha Kund was only had been lost by then and was forgotten. And historically, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went only later to Vrindavan. Because basically, what happened is this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in 1513, was supposed to go to Vrindavan, went back to Bengal, right? And then he went to Vrindavan, and then on the way back from Vrindavan, he met Rupa Goswami for the second time, first time in Ramakrishna, and he instructed him in Allahabad, right? So, if you calculate that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went all the way to Vrindavan, spent some time there, came back to Allahabad. That's half a year, maybe a year. Easily a year went by, and Rupa Goswami had business, he had all that money to kind of distribute properly, in a responsible way, all that wealth. And then finally, when all the business was settled, they both went on the way and met in Allahabad. So, no earlier than 1514, a year later, where Rupa Goswami then received all the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, I'm reconstructing something here. Of course, I could do it in another way and say that, well, all these Radhakuns and Shyamakuns and Madan Mahans came later. And it's actually not at all from the time of Rupa. Fine. I can't argue that. But still, the Bhakti Ratnakar describes that they had this Gupta Vrindavan and that they made all kinds of places like Vrindavan. So still, even then, even if these remnants are not from that time, even then, still, they had a great focus on Vrindavan. And, they didn't stay that much longer after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. Rupa Goswami, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit, shortly after, retired. So, anyway, this is a little bit of history about Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, just so that we can appreciate how they... why they were such learned personalities, how they were just the ideal personalities for doing that work of nana shastra vichara naikanipano sadharma samstapako, to scrutinize, to establish the conclusions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave based on revealed scripture. Which is not an easy task. But that's what they did. That's why you see Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's all quotes. A point, and then a whole bunch of quotes to support it. A point, whole bunch of quotes to support it. A point, whole bunch, and it's like presenting the teachings systematically of Mahaprabhu, but each time underbuilt with quotes from Bhagavatam or Puranic literature or sometimes even other Vedic literature. Okay, any questions or comments about that? Well, it wasn't exactly like that in that time in Bengal anymore. Obviously, In 1204, the Muslims conquered Nadia, right? And from that time on, Nadia was the seat of the government, actually, and a second place where the government was in Goda. Yeah? So Nadia means Navadvip. And then what happened was that from that time on, basically, Bengal was under Islam rule. And then Hindus were getting grants and positions under this Islam government. And they basically worked it in a system where they would give authority to people to govern an area, to collect taxes from that area, and then pay it to the government. Yeah. So, and otherwise, the Muslims were like not present in such large numbers, but they had mercenaries, Turkish mercenaries. Somehow or other, the Turks, they were in Islam very. They were the mercenaries. There were many very poor Turkish nomad tribes who were traveling through the Middle East, through Iran and Iraq and so on. So local kings would capture these tribes and enslave them. And then, as they enslaved them, they would turn the slaves into soldiers. They would train them as soldiers. And then, so in this way you got whole armies of Turkish soldiers. Of course, you know, an army of slaves alone was not so easy. So they started to pay armies. So gradually you got these professional Turkish armies. So we see that the Turks were very, the Turkish armies were very instrumental in conquering India. They all used, although like Mohammed Ghori, who conquered India by tricky means, was himself not a Turk. His army mainly was Turkish. And he had... And then after his death, it was a Turkish commander that actually captured Bengal. Then the Nawab Hussein Shah is supposedly from a very aristocratic background, from actually Saudi Arabia, and from an original Arabian family. Of course, if that's true, others say that he's from Sindh and, you know, Pakistan, and that he wasn't so aristocratic, but, you know. The Nawab was certainly into history, because, into making history, the Nawab had, you know, the Nawabs, the rulers, the sultans of Bengal, had already been printing coins. And then Nawab Hussein Shah printed coins with pictures of himself and then mentioning certain areas that he had conquered, even before he had conquered it. Right? So he hadn't conquered Orissa yet, he hadn't conquered Assam yet, and, you know, and portions of Bengal he hadn't conquered yet. But it was already printed on the coin that he had conquered these places. But then it was by military force that a minority was controlling. So, and they did it by allowing Hindus to rule. And Hindus were then just ruling and the tax and this and that. So then the Muslim rulers, they had a problem in keeping Muslim ministers, because there was a lot of murders going on, and there was a lot of tradition where the ministers would step the ruler, kill him, poison him somehow or other, and then the ministers would crown themselves as sultan. Therefore, in India, the Muslim rulers, they preferred Hindu ministers. So they kept Hindu ministers. So after a few hundred years, you know, that had become a prevalent culture. So that much interaction was there. It was not that... but they were keeping their certain customs, right? So it would indicate that Rupa and Sanatan had still kept certain customs intact. That they, for example, were vegetarian and were not like... that only externally they had taken on the dress of Muslims and the ways of Muslims, but that internally they were still Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnava community accepted them as such. Although they were not posing themselves as Brahmanas, they would always pose themselves as being very fallen and malicious and throughout. And we find that later Sanatan Goswami was in Jagannath Puri, and that he didn't even want to walk on the road that goes past the temple in Puri, because he didn't want that his body would touch the body of the pujaris. And he walked over the hot beach, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "How could you do that? Now you've burned your feet." He said, "Burned my feet?" And there were blisters all over his feet. He said, "I didn't feel anything." So his humility was... Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically said this, "Please give up your humility, it's just too much, it's breaking my heart." So they were not proud and claiming a Brahminical status, they were humble. So what I've done today is I've given you I've identified a few pastimes from the CC, and then provided a lot of context. As you can see, I've provided more history about Rupa and Sanatan, about them as Rasacharya, and also where they came from. I used the writings of Bharata Muni, I used the Sahitya Darpan, I used also the Bhakti Ratnakar, right, as source material. And if you would listen to the lecture again, I indicated it each time when I was in the CC and when I was out of the CC. You may not have completely noted that. You know, you may have sort of slept through it. So you may think some stories in the CC that are not in the CC. My advice to you is read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The reason why I say that is because the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as I say, is providing us with our identity. If we try to be Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we will never know what it is. You know, here we are, Westerners. You know, and there's only one man wearing pants, and you know, most are in the bed sheets, and you know, and the ladies in the kitchen curtains, and or the tablecloth, you know, and that's how we're dressed here. You know, we are sort of like dressing, in a way that is outside our own culture, and but you know, we don't know either of the cultures. Right? When we are in Bengal, the Bengali Vaishnavas look at us like, you know, they're not really, and we're looking at them also. They're strange, because we have our own culture, you know, our own ISKCON culture, which is a mix of what, you know, it's a mix of whatever Bengali culture Gaudiya Vaishnava culture Prabhupada brought in, some culture from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some leftovers from hippie culture in the 60s. Wow, man, far out. And obviously some Western culture. We're sitting here on chairs in a classroom. Yes, that's not at all, not in a tall, not in a Sanskrit tall, under a tree, even a big plant inside the room and all on mats on the floor would come closer, right, to the Bengali environment. So culturally, we're sort of halfway there. Therefore, we don't understand how to be a devotee. And due to this lack of culture, Prabhupada once said that Krishna consciousness is a cultural conquest. It's a cultural conquest in the sense that if you have culture, then it automatically becomes easy. The modern culture, a lot of people are struggling with their spiritual life, not so much because they're not sincere, but because they live in the wrong culture. Because they're culturally not supporting spiritual life. I mean, if you work in an office, it's hard. It's just hard to live that double life, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It's hard. It's hard to live a double life where you get very little opportunity to practice your spiritual belief and support it, and then you come home. And okay, then you have to squeeze a little Krishna consciousness in the mix. So that's hard. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find more about our identity. I said it earlier this week, but since all of you weren't there anyway, I say it again, is that the Bhagavatam gives us also role models. Because we see that the Pandavas are behaving according to devotional principles, and we are following the principles of the Pandavas. At the same time, though, the Pandavas are a little bit different than we are. Bhima is as strong as 10,000 elephants. That's stronger than Spider-Man. Bhima can stop a train. Yeah. Basically, stronger than 10,000 elephants. He can knock a train off the rails, There he's standing like, boom, train flies in millions of pieces. Inconceivable what kind of power are you speaking about with Bhima. And so on, Arjuna was able to go up to the heavenly planets and meet the demigods face to face. Bhishma Dev, they shot him with hundreds of arrows, and he was still alive. And, one arrow is enough for us. That's when we go off to the ambulance, And Bishwadev has like hundreds of arrows, and he's still totally cool. So they are, in a way, supernatural. They are almost mythological. And they are not mythological, but almost, like superheroes. But whereas the personalities of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're like us. And they're also not royalty, they don't live in palaces, they are living like us. They're devotees, like us. Chanting Hare Krishna, like us. So we find better role models in the CC. After all, the shape that the movement has now is the shape of Lord Chaitanya. And whatever differences there are, it would be, over time, would be advantageous to bring it closer in the shape of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta came from a Bengali background, which was still in many ways similar to the times of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in so many ways. But then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta went over the bridge that separates tradition from modernity. And he drove around in a car, and He said things like planes should be used only by devotees. And then, you know, then by the time Krishna consciousness comes to our generation, we only know this side of the bridge, the modernity side of the bridge. We've never been on the traditional side of the bridge. So it may be good for us, even although we live in modernity, to find out a little bit more about what's on the traditional side of the bridge. And maybe sometimes, when we go into India, to live a little closer to that traditional way. We might find some strength and wealth there, which can help us in our current situation. Because, you know, I came once to some nice grihastha's house, and they had invited me for prasadam, and, you know, and then they served it out, and it was rice and goulash. And I go, goulash? They know what goulash is. Goulash, because you are from other parts of the world, you know tortilla and you know paella, or you know other things, but goulash is normally a sort of a sauce with certain chunks in it that are not veggie. And so, you know, they serve goulash. And I'm looking at the chunks and I go to them, I said, what's that? And they said, soya. I said, okay, soya goulash. Then they said, what do you want to drink, Maharaj? Wine or beer? I go, wine or beer? He says, alcohol free, Maharaj. I go, I don't know. And then after the meal, they serve decaf coffee. You know? So, and you know, it was all within the four regulative principles, but it wasn't quite the culture, if you know what I mean. Culturally, it was kind of contaminated. Right? So it wasn't exactly, it didn't exactly feel ecstatic, you know. And then you go to Mayapur, and there in Mayapur, oh, you get this Mahaprasadam. And there is Helancha Sak and Achyuta Sak, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to take this also, and Helancha Sak gives you love of God if you take it. Oh, well, give me some more of that spinach, please. Yeah, yeah, I'll take some of that spinach. Hey. And then Achyuta Sak gives you long life. Yeah, throw some more of that on me plate as well. You know, and then you get the banana flower sabji, and then you know, you read Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we'd eat banana flower sabji. Is this it? You know, wow. And then Kheer Mohan, the sweets are coming in. Hey, go give me a Kheer Mohan. You know, read it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Misty Doi. Hey. And you have a lunch, which is like straight out of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it tastes good, and it feels really like, wow, you know. Very, so nice. Eh? Wow, this is so nice. You eat from banana leaves, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It just, you know, it's better than goulash, you know what I mean? With wine or beer and decaf coffee, if you know what I'm talking about. It's not quite, doesn't quite make it.
I would drink this goulash without soya, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The salt is the same.
Yeah. Hmm. But anyway, you get the idea about the, you know, little attachment to goulash, eh?
Goulash. Oh.
Goulash.
Some devotees say even know how to make a scrambled eggs without eggs.
Without scrambled eggs without eggs. Mm-hmm. In Singapore, there's a restaurant, and there it's a... There you can have chicken, and but it's fully vegetarian. But everything is there. There is a skin on it, and it has bumps, and it has a bone also. And you can just really like eat it like of the bone, but it's all vegetarian. You can check it out if you go to Singapore. I can find out for you. I personally never went there, to tell you the truth, but because I already, the goulash was too much for me, and then the chicken is another level, you know. No, so it is. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita gives us our cultural identity as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. The Chaitanya Charitamrita gives us also an understanding of how much we are following Indian culture and how much we are not following Indian culture. You know what I mean? Some of us, they are Indian, from Indian background, and you know, everything is very... Yes, yeah, there's some aunties. You go in England. It's funny because you know you have the youth is like I have a disciple who speaks with a Cockney accent, right? And he's a Gujarati, and then his parents came. Well, father came from India, mother from Kenya, and then all the aunties and this and that are only speaking Gujarati, yeah. And then, so there's a little culture gap there. So when we are looking at like, yeah, which elements of Indian culture are important, are part of Lord Chaitanya's movement, and which elements not? That's also important. So the CC fills in a lot of, in this way. And the CC offers us a pure spiritual process, pure devotional service, through which we can realize our eternal identity. In that way, the CC provides us with our identity. Okay, well, that was it for me for today. And now, if anyone has a question or comment.
We were talking about the Navab, so this Kazi is probably position that is lower than Navab, right? Kazi.
Oh yeah, Kazi is.
I was wondering, like, the Kazi that he has the Samadhi in Mayapur,
yeah,
and became, like, was talking to Lord Chaitanya, is it the same Kazi that gave the order to beat Haridas?
No. Kazis were district heads, you know, they were like, and they were more spiritual personalities. They were like mullahs, they were like spiritual teachers, but they also had administrative authority. So, Haridas was beaten in a place called Ambuya Muluka, which is not in Nadia, it's a bit further out direction, Calcutta. Ambuya Muluka. So that was another Kazi who ruled in the Ambuya Muluka area. Yeah.
Which part of Indian culture we should not follow?
Well, a lot of Indian culture we are not following. The Bhagavatam says Dharma Projita Kaidavo. It speaks of cheating religion and says that the Vedas can be divided into three sections: Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda. The Karmakanda are rituals that help us, that give us material benefit. We are not meant to follow. Jnanakanda gives us liberation. We are not meant to follow. Upasanakanda, part of it is worship of demigods. We are not supposed to engage in. We only, another part of Upasanakanda worships Vishnu. That we do. So we follow a small portion of the Vedas, and then in Bengal and in India as a whole, there's been a lot of influence of Smarta Brahmanas. The Smartas were, well, different Brahmanas specialized in different scriptures. So there were Brahmanas who were Chaturvedis, they had studied the four Vedas. There were three Vedas. They had studied the Rig, the Yajur, and the Samaveda, and not so much the Atharva Veda. Then, you know, you had another class of Brahmins. They were considered of a lower order. They had studied the Dharma Shastra, the Smriti, Dharma Smriti. That was of a lower order. And there were some families in South India which were expert in this, and they gained more influence, and especially when they invited certain prominent scholars with families, like villages practically, whole villages to come over from Kashmir. And then you got like a stronghold of the Smarta culture. And they were basically taking the Dharma Shastra and analyzing it. And Dharma Shastra governs rules of everyday conduct. Yeah, and different sanskaras that are being performed within that, which are rites of passage, which are like certain junctions in life, one should do this ritual. Next junction in life, this ritual. So Dharma Shastra is full of that, and Dharma Shastra gives rules that govern social life. So then the Smartas, many of they became influenced by Shankaracharya, and the Panchupasana worship came in. Panchupasana worship, I happen to have on this board. Are trying to pacify the evil influence of the material nature by doing sacrifices. Therefore, if Kali who is the ghastly feature of the material nature, and she wants blood by taking accidents and diseases, then we'll offer her a goat to set it. Here, take the blood of the goat. Pacify God. Take the blood. So that's Kali, the harsh feature of the material life that strikes out at you with accident and death and horrible disease, etc. Kali, pacify her. Shaktas, worship out of fear, but materially motivated. Suryas, worshipping of the sun, looking at the positive energy coming from the sun, seeing the prana energy also. Reiki, Reiki. In its modern form, right, is Surya. Ganesh, business mentality with the Lord. Ganesh, so cute, removes all the obstacles so we can worship Ganesh so that we can get where we want. Not that we worship him to surrender to him to get where he wants. No, we use Ganesh to get where we want. Profit, 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 and therefore Ganapachas, yes. And then Shaivites, Shiva, there is the Shiva Lingam, the male form, the female form, Shambhu, the generating principle emanating from Mahavishnu that is bringing life to Pradhana, the potential of the material energy, Prakriti. So, coming out of Brahman is, according to the impersonalist, comes the Shambhu principle and then impregnates Prakriti. So, and then that winds back up, and then all you have left is Brahman. Therefore, many of the Shaivites are impersonalists. See? And then Vaishnavas. But there is a class of Vaishnavas You see the posters all over, and the devotees are buying them, where you see Krishna on his flute, and you see an Om sign behind him. Have you seen the posters? Never seen posters? You will see. Coming from India, poster, Krishna playing flute. Very nice. Behind him, Om sign. Yes? So, that means that Krishna comes out of the Om, out of the Brahman. That's what it means, that Brahman is the origin of Krishna. So, don't buy those posters, even if it's a nice picture of Krishna. No, that Om sign is off. It's saying the wrong message. Okay? That's what Sankaracharya said. This is Sankaracharya's philosophy.
So, Om indicates impersonal.
Yes, Brahman. Brahman means that Krishna comes out of Brahman. Brahman is the highest.
I've seen one with a light also.
There is a light behind the light. Yeah, the light as well, of course, yeah. That's the Jyoti, the Brahma Jyoti. Yeah. Okay, so that was all part of Sankaracharya's philosophy. Why did I go to introduce Panchapasana? Oh, God.
We have
The Smarta Brahmanas. So the Smarta Brahmanas began to become more and more materialistic. They began to preoccupy themselves. They didn't study the Upanishads at all, or any Puranas. So they were not reading any literature that was dealing with the higher end of spiritual life. At least these two are dealing with the ultimate meaning of life. What is the meaning of life? What is the goal of life? Here, this is all just up to this level. It's all adjust the material circumstances, materialistic worship. But here, even the impersonalists want liberation. They believe in an eternal reality, and they look at an eternal reality, and so the Vaishnavas. So then, the Smartas were more preoccupied with materialistic rituals, never read scriptures about the eternal. So it's not surprising that they got more and more into worship of the demigods. And therefore the Smartas, by the time the Smartas reached Bengal, they were all Shaktas. All Shaktas. You see? And yeah, Kali worship. Right? And then you got all this Durga worship, Kali worship, and then, yeah, well, a little flesh on the plate, a little wine on the plate, and all that, we find that. That was going on. So this is part of the environment that some tantric rituals came in from Buddhist origin. Tantra came from Buddhist. So anyway, and then we got Bengali Smartas, and then you got some smartest scholars who like really wrote like a serious volume of literature and became very, very famous and prominent in Bengal. And that's why, like, the Smartas, they had a big stronghold in Bengal. That's why in Bengal you see Kali everywhere. Right? They just had a full grip on Bengal. And in that environment, Advaita Acharya, who was 52 years older than Lord Chaitanya, started to preach. And he started to preach totally against all these Brahmanas and call it rubbish and speak about devotional service. And they couldn't touch him, because he was from a Varendra Brahmana family, a very aristocratic family. His grandfather had been a big government minister in the Sylhet district. So he was a wealthy aristocratic person. So they couldn't say anything, although sometimes it was just outrageous. Yeah. So he was speaking against the Smartas. Something must be done about it. But then he would roar because his voice, he was Sima, Advaita Sima, is like a lion, it says in Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, and he was very learned. So he's aristocratic, learned, and powerful. So no one dared to mess with Advaita Acharya. Therefore, but the environment was Smarta and all materialistic worship. So that part of the Veda. Lakbina means that part we don't want. And now we've used up the time for the day. Yes, sir.
Just these different parts this Durga worship is just a misunderstanding of the final, like Vedanta Sutra is like,
not understanding that the real goal of the, or being bewildered by the excess in the Bhagavad Gita, by the flowery language of the Vedas.
So it's got like speculation, right? It's like speculation.
Sure, you know, it's a degradation, a speculation. As I said, these smarter brahmanas were studying the Smriti. They were not.
They were
more like purohits. They were more like priests. They were doing priestly work and getting some donations, who are like doing this ritual, that ritual, and you know, that one, and living a good life. But it was all materialistic, and they were not interested in eternal life. And as a result, they started to, their worship went down, became demigod worship. And as you can see, that's what you see in Bengal today. You know, I don't know if you ever were there, but it's this puja, that puja, all the pujas are going on, of every demigod. Like, even, you know, at one point, one day in the year, there is Vishwakarma puja, the architect of the demigods. And that's the day that you worship your tools. And then you see people worshipping their bicycles, you know, doing an arte to their bicycle. Ding, ding, ding. So, you know, it's all keep the material energy sweet. And, you know, even and Bengalis, it's very much ingrained in the Bengali culture. So that means that not everything that comes out of Bengal or everything that comes out of India is bona fide according to the standard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, we... muchas gracias. Therefore, we can we must study the culture and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we can understand better, you know, what out of Indian culture makes sense and what doesn't. What we should keep, what we should introduce, what we should not introduce into our minds. Otherwise, we'll never figure it out. You know, so many things are happening, and is it part of our tradition or not? Anyway, that's a discussion for another day.